Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hello and welcome to this mini-series of Globally Speaking on the future of human-machine collaboration and our philosophy on the power of the two combined, which we call genuine intelligence. I'm Emma Fisher, VP of Global Marketing at AWS, and I'm joined today by our Director of Linguistic AI Services, Marina Pantacheva. Welcome, Marina. Would you like to give a quick introduction to yourself and also your role at AWS?
Hello, Emma. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really delighted to be here with you today. Well, my name is Marina Pantacheva, and I have a background in language. I'm an educated theoretical linguist, and I did my PhD on the topic of nanosyntax, which is a fascinating framework to work in. My research basically boiled down to dismantling language to down to its most elementary particles, and then building sophisticated models to compose language back again. About 10 years ago, I moved to the localization industry and the language industry. I was attracted by the fast pace of that industry, and I started on various projects. But a year ago, my interest was captured by AI, linguistic AI specifically, which happened at the moment OpenAI released GPT, ChatGPT model, and initiated the competition in that space. So I dove into that. And since then, I've been submerged in linguistic AI, exploring it, finding applications of linguistic AI, going deeper and deeper into this fascinating topic. So I'm really happy to be here today to share the insights that I've gained, knowledge that I have, and various opinions on the topic.
Thank you. And there's quite an interesting point there, because we genuinely stand at this new era of content transformation. You know, we, as you've just said, you know, AI is really at that inflection point. Generative AI, especially large language models, have more than hit mainstream now, you know, from translating languages to instantly understanding and generating human-like text. And new tools are giving people and organizations the power they could only dream of a year ago. And one of the topics that we started to explore last year was actually how artificial intelligence and human intelligence, the combination of the two and the collaboration between the two, are absolutely paramount for the future of content and communication. And we came up with the philosophy around and coined the term genuine intelligence. So I think that's probably a good start point for today, Marina, in terms of what does genuine intelligence mean, and maybe we decouple that for now and start a focus on what does human intelligence mean, and then what does artificial intelligence mean, and then we can go on to, well, how do the two combined work together?
When thinking about human and artificial intelligence, there are different ways to explain it. And my favorite way of explaining it is the way I explain it to my six-year-old daughter one day when she asked me about all this AI I was talking about at home when sharing with my family the day at work I had. So she asked me, what is this artificial intelligence? And the way I explained it to her was by making recourse to cartoon characters she knew about from our famous comic series, and those were Asterix and Obelix. And for those listeners who don't know who Asterix and Obelix are, well, they are two fictional characters. Asterix is a little guy. He's he doesn't have much physical strength, but he has enormous intellectual prowess. He's very clever, smart. He always finds creative ways to solve any problem, and he has very sharp wits. While Obelix, his friend, he's not particularly quick-witted, but he has immense physical power, because when he was a little boy, he fell into a pot full of magic potion, and this magic potion endowed him with this immense power. And when I think about human and artificial intelligence, I just really have to think about Asterix and Obelix, because large language models very much remind me of Obelix with their enormous power and the enormous amount of magic potion that they ingested in the form of trillions and trillions of words and training data. Whereas Asterix is more similar to me to the human intelligence, namely, you know, this creative element, this way of guiding the artificial intelligence and its immense power to do the right things at the right time and in the right way. So the duo Asterix and Obelix is very much like the duo artificial intelligence and human intelligence to me. But now moving away from the explanation to a six-year-old and talking about human intelligence and artificial intelligence for adults, things are, of course, not that simple, right? The thing about artificial intelligence and specifically linguistic artificial intelligence, that is those immense large language models like ChatGPT, GPT for Llama and so on, they are trained really on trillions and trillions of bytes of data, right? So the whole of internet, all the digitalized literature in the world, all of that stream of words have gone into their training. Just for a human to read all that content that was used to train GPT 3.5, a human would need 170,000 years if the human reads 8 hours a day. Okay, so obviously, large language models have much more data, they have much more information than a human has, which is the reason why they are so fluent with language and they can generate content. And that brings another question, actually, when it comes to large language models and linguistic AI. How much To what extent is language sufficient to enable an artificially intelligent model to create the right model of the real world? To what extent does language represent our world and enable AI to have a correct understanding and representation of this world? Is everything that we experience really reflected in language? And I think that no, because language is an abstraction. And it is a simplification. And it does not carry all the information that we as humans have, which defines our human intelligence. It doesn't carry visual information in the same way that we, in which we perceive visual stimuli. It doesn't carry auditory information. So language is simply an abstraction. It's an oversimplification of the world. And we cannot achieve true intelligence by just training a model on language. Just think about, you know, how many colors the human eye can distinguish. It's about 1 million. I mean, assuming that, you know, it's like not, there is no color blindness and so on. The human eye can distinguish about 1 million hues. How many words for colors do we have in a language? 12 basic ones. And then if we add the additional colors like pistachio green and olive green and so on, maybe we'll get up to 100. So 100 words for color, but 1 million colors that we can see. So that's a good example of how language is an oversimplification of the real physical world that we live in. So back to the question, what is artificial intelligence? Well, I already talked about that. This is a model that is trained based on data to generalize basically relationships between pieces of information. And human intelligence is much more than that. Human intelligence, there's no good definition, like there is no agreement in the literature what exactly it is. But human intelligence, it's a combination of understanding the physical world, the ability to remember and retrieve information, the ability to reason, the ability to plan, and I think also the ability to explain one's reasoning, to explain one's decisions.
There's something interesting in the report around the authentic human-machine partnership that underpins genuine intelligence. And you said something that, you know, we could lose our creativity in the light of Gen AI. You know, that active partnership is really vital to make sure we don't stop thinking and we simply default to the machine. And there could be a lot of negative implications that could bring. And, you know, that does bring us on to things like the tasks, what tasks do you think are best suited to humans, and how do we then collaborate, and how does AI think, and you know, how can we in partnership with AI utilize that for the more maybe mundane tasks or the at scale tasks? So talk to me a bit more about that.
When I think about the tasks that are best done by AI and tasks that are best done by humans, I cannot help but think of a famous paradox in the AI world, which is called the Moravec paradox. And what it basically says is that things that are easy for humans are really hard for AI, and things that are hard for humans are really easy for AI. So just to give a couple of examples, tasks that require a lot of computational power or a lot of rational thinking, logic, lookup, such as playing chess, for example, or calculating differentials, or like doing very difficult algebraic operations, they are difficult for humans, but AI has no troubles with that. Actually, computers, you know, any computational system doesn't have any problems with that. But tasks that are really effortless for humans, such as reading off emotions from the facial expressions of people around us, understanding how somebody may feel, having theory of mind, catching a ball, this is really easy. But for humans, but it's extraordinarily hard for AI. So that is the Moravec paradox, that easy tasks for humans are difficult for AI and vice versa. And there is kind of a reasoning behind it, or rather an explanation behind it, which I really like here. And it is that tasks that are evolutionary very old, that we have developed millions and millions of years ago, they are easy for humans, effortless, and they are difficult for AI. But tasks that are evolutionary recent in humans, which we need to do with conscious effort, such as mathematics, logical reasoning, and so on, they are more explainable. They are not subconscious. We are conscious of those tasks. We can program them. We can explain them. And those are the tasks that are easy to feed into artificial intelligent models and make AI perform them better than humans, because they typically require a lot of computational power. So when we talk about which tasks are best performed by AI and which those tasks are best performed by humans, a very easy answer would be, well, the evolutionary old tasks, those that are effortless for humans and humans are so good at them, such as processing of visual information, emotions, understanding how people feel and that sort of things, well, those are the human tasks. And then the tasks that are difficult for humans, such as performing complex computations, calculations, applying logical rules, lookup, playing chess, playing Go, and that sort of things, those are the tasks for AI. That would be oversimplification, though, because I think that AI can also perform tasks that are not just playing chess or generating language, but AI can be instructed by the humans to perform tasks that also humans do, maybe a little bit, not that much effortlessly. And this is where the human ingenuity comes in. To me, one of the most fascinating tasks for humanity right now is to be able to teach AI to perform tasks at human grade level. And the reason why I find it so fascinating is because this presupposes that we as humans will start being conscious of what happens inside us when we perform a task. When we perform one of those effortless tasks that seem really easy to us, but are really hard for AI to get, we use a lot of implicit knowledge. We actually don't know what we know. We don't realize what we think, how we think. It's so fast. So we don't understand how we do those tasks. And going into the details of how we perform tasks, understanding our own thinking, way of reasoning, the logic we apply, the processes that happen, and how to explain that to AI, this is what I find really fascinating. And going back to the original question about genuine intelligence, this is what I think is the role of humans. Understand what we know without being even aware that we know it, unravel this mystery and design, like on a practical level, design a prompt to AI so that we instruct the AI to perform at our level. That is a challenge.
Human intelligence is far too precious a resource to be kind of wasted on banal tasks. And the focus on kind of machines and that they can do almost the tedious, the repetitiveness. You know, we allow humans to shine. I think that was something that was also cited in the report in terms of the combination of the two and where the human plays the most importance in terms of machine learning, machine training, but also in terms of the genuine output that you get as a collaboration and a paired partnership of the two.
Precisely. It is the human creativity that we still cannot replicate in AI. AI can be creative to a certain extent. It can create new combinations of words, for example, or new combinations of pixels. But the creativity of AI is limited to its training data. It will never come up with something that was not in the training data. So it is the limited creativity. Human creativity is unlimited. I mean, it's limited by the capacity of our brains, but that's like still gives us an enormous playground. So just to bring it to a more concrete example, when we use AI to generate content, I think that the right way to for humans to collaborate with AI is for humans need to generate the content, generate the idea, generate what you want to say, and then have AI formulated in a really fluent language. Explain to the AI what the meaning must be and just use AI to push that meaning, like to put it in nice words, not ask AI to generate the content itself, the meaning itself, because linguistic AI is basically a text generator engine. It generates content, it generates text by selecting words that have the highest probability from a given probability distribution to follow other words. But AI, linguistic AI, has absolutely no idea about the meaning of the words. The content is not grounded in the real world. It sounds very fluid, very nice, very rich vocabulary, no grammatical issues, but there is no actual understanding of the content. AI doesn't know what it says, doesn't know what it means. Sometimes I think about it in terms of, so when I think how AI represents concepts, like how does AI understand words or like not operate with words in their semantic meaning, I am thinking of the way people who are vision impaired use words, right? So for example, if you have a vision impaired child which was born without seeing and learned language, this child will use the color terms properly, right? So it will have a concept for red, it will have a concept for green, but it will not really know what red and green means in terms of visual representation. And it's the same with large language models. They have a concept of woman, they have a concept of green, they have a concept of probably love and elephants, but they don't really know what that means, what it is to be an elephant and what it is to see green.
So when we're talking about the inputs in terms of, you know, how large language models learn and the kind of the data, I suppose more the ethics behind how we train the AI models. You know, we talk about responsible AI, the fact that there's no shortcuts, the fact that, you know, there needs to be a kind of a high caliber of a training community, you know, when we annotate, when we label data, and that responsible approach to developing AI and that kind of sturdy foundation and high ethical standards. Talk to me about some of the challenges that we face today, both from a technical bias, but also a social bias when it comes to some of the outputs that we are seeing and, you know, the topic of kind of ethics in AI in general.
Yeah. So the topic of bias, let's start with training AI and the topic of bias. That's a really important topic. And I would like here to distinguish the technical meaning of bias from the way bias is actually used nowadays by journalists and media and in the regular discourse that we have. So from the point of view of natural language processing and machine learning, bias is actually a systematic deviation of the model prediction from the target data. So just to give you a simple example, if you have a model that has been trained on, let's say, predicting the weather, and it systematically predicts a temperature that is by 10 degrees Fahrenheit lower than the actual observed temperature, it has a bias for lower temperature. Right. But the way we use the word bias in our current discourse is different. It's not the distance between the model prediction and the target values, but it's rather the distance between the model predictions and the world we want to live in. A perfect world, which sometimes is an imaginary world. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about what we want AIs to do and talking about bias, we in a way need to decide what data we should use to train AI to achieve the behavior we want AI to exhibit. Do we want to train AI on data which is deprived of the bias that actually really exists in our world? Do we want to create models that do not represent the reality, but a reality we want to have? Mm. Or do we want to really have bias-free data that we train AI with, hoping that in this way we will achieve or speed up a social reform? Mm. And the question is difficult, right? Because both have their cons and pros. But even if we decide to go for a bias-free data, balanced data set, and so on, we still cannot be quite sure that we will eliminate bias, the kind of a social type of bias, from AI responses, because AI models can infer bias even when such information is not present in the data. There have been lots of cases where data has been, for example, entirely cleaned up for gender information. For example, there was a case when an AI model was created in order to assess job applicants based on their CV and recommend applicants for particular vacancies. So that model was trained on data which did not contain any information, whether the applicants were male or female. Still, despite that, the AI systematically chose male applicants for leading positions. And the question was why, given that there was no such information in the training data at all. And the reason was that the model could infer gender based on statistically significant phenomena in the training data. And in this case, it was the particular type of language, words, lexical expressions that male applicants had in their CVs, and those were not present in the CVs of female applicants. So just based on the language that was used by the applicants and the difference between male language and female language, the AI model became biased because it started choosing male applicants for the leading positions, even without knowing those were males. I mean, generally, AI doesn't know who is male, who is female, and what that means. But there was bias. So it will be really difficult to eliminate bias from the training data that we use because it is simply present in our training data, in our society.
Could that be down to the way that that was prompted, Marina? Or was that purely down to the inference of the, or the language that was used in that model? Just genuinely interested. Because obviously the way in which you ask a question, the way in which you prompt can also determine the outcome.
Yes. Well, in this particular case, I don't think that it was because of the way it was prompted, because the bias was actually present in the data. Even though it was masked, there was a difference. But what you just asked me reminded me of an experiment I did with GPT-4o this morning. I was testing it for the ability to draw analogies, because language models, the way they are trained, the way they work with the vector space and the semantic space, they're actually capable of drawing analogies. And I wanted to kind of push GPT to see whether it can exhibit gender bias when asked to create analogies. So when I asked, so generally you can test for analogies in the following way. You can ask a language model to complete a sentence of the sort, king is to queen as man is to, and then the answer is woman. Okay, king is to queen the way man is to woman. Okay, so then I decided to start with checking it for occupations, and I asked it, man is to computer programmer the way woman is to, and then I was expecting the most prototypical female profession to come or something like that. But it was clever enough and said, well, man is to computer programmer the way woman is to computer programmer, because computer programmer is not a profession that is associated with a particular gender. Anyone can be a computer programmer, no matter whether man or woman. And I'm like, okay. So then I tried with doctor is to man the way nurse is to. And then again, it said, well, man is to doctor the way woman is to. And then the answer was, well, doctor, of course, because women can be doctors and so on. But then I switched the prompt and I asked, doctor is to man the way nurse is to. And the answer was woman. So when I reversed, when I first asked gender and then profession, it managed to eliminate the bias. But when I reversed the order in the prompt and first asked about the profession and then the gender, then it fell into the trap. It exhibited the bias. So prompt does play a difference.
It does play a part. And it does then kind of lean into content confidence, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, trusting the output and the importance that really brands need to have that human in the loop, that expert in the loop in terms of the output. Do you have any thoughts around, you know, trustworthy content or, you know, some of the importance of how the human plays a key part in that, ensuring that brands are able to trust the outputs from large language models?
Well, I generally think that we should not just blindly ask large language models to generate content, that is, generate the meaning, the semantic meaning of the content. We should use them in order to increase the productivity of humans who generate content. Still, the leading role here is to be played by the human, and the human must determine what the message will be, right? Don't let AI generate the message itself. The most reasonable usage of AI and the way we should, humans should collaborate with AI, to me, is break down any activity into the tasks it is composed into, right? So in any activity, let's say creative content writing or translation or language quality evaluation, there are subparts, subtasks. Some of those tasks can be purely mechanical, right? Like spell check, for example. It's almost mechanical nowadays. So those mechanical tasks can simply be performed by automation, like even dumb automation. You might not need artificial intelligence there. Other tasks on the other extreme are really creative, and they necessitate a combination of different types of intelligence, the type of intelligence that humans have, the complex type of intelligence, where you associate emotions with wording, with the effect it's going to have, with the moral values, like the multifaceted type of intelligence that humans have. Keep those tasks for humans only. And one of those tasks is define the meaning of the generated content. And then there are the tasks in the middle that are a combination of kind of a repetitive, time-consuming process, but also it's not entirely mechanical. So it does need some element of intelligence there. And give those to artificial intelligence and linguistic AI, because then we can leverage from this immense power that AI has, the power to process large amounts of data, create large amounts of content, be tireless, right? AI doesn't need to sleep. It can work around the clock for us. So we can leverage from this power, but at the same time, you know, it helps the productivity of humans. So the middle ground tasks that are repetitive, they can be defined well, but they do require some sort of linguistic intelligence. These are the perfect tasks for AI.
Thank you. Just kind of thinking about the future and, you know, the accelerated pace that both technology and, you know, is enabling content to be produced at such a pace as well. And, you know, thinking about our philosophy around human-machine collaboration, what would you see as, you know, things that enterprises need to look out for in the next 6 to 12 months, you know, in terms of a prediction or things that you can see in terms of a trend that the technological pace is allowing organizations to do? So more about kind of the future things that we could see coming up.
So I think that in the future, linguistic AI will be taking over more and more of the daily work, but it will create a vacuum. There will be a new type of skills that are necessary for which we need to educate a workforce. That workforce is only emerging now. So for the, if you ask me, you know, how do we plan for the next 6 to 12 months, the most reasonable investment of effort for me would be education. Invest in educating language specialists in work with AI, the way they can communicate with AI, create prompts, formulate instructions. That's a special way of thinking that is necessary there. How to prompt the model to do exactly what you want it to do, and how to prompt oneself to understand what exactly we as humans do when we perform a task. So the new language models will be probably coming up more and more powerful, more and more often. There is, of course, a certain limit to how powerful they can get, which is like simply real world limitations, you know, how much energy we want to put in terms of electricity into training them, how much capacity, the hardware capacity we have for training them. But the models will be getting more and more sophisticated. Already now we see that GPT-4o is really much better than GPT-3.5, and the models will be getting better and better. So companies will have to keep up with this fairly quick development, stay informed, react very quickly, and heavily invest into preparing the workforce and the skill.
That's quite interesting, because there was a report actually from Microsoft last week, which was that employees want AI at work, you know, and they won't wait for companies to catch up. You know, so I think it was 75% of knowledge workers use AI at work already. So, you know, the need for enterprises to upskill workers to ensure that they're providing not just the tools, but the training and the application of AI to streamline their work, to accelerate their roles, to you know, the way in which that we onboard, in which we train, in which we embrace the talent of the future. And that was one thing that, you know, we spoke about last year as an organization, is moving from translators to language specialists, because they are cultural consultants, they are smart technologists, you know, they're more than just translating words from A to B. So, you know, I think what you've just said really does resonate in terms of, you know, the future role of language and anyone who's in the language industry. So thank you. That kind of really does align. Thank you, Marina. You know, we covered kind of the accelerated pace of content. We covered the combination of human and machine, and the kind of collaboration of the two, and the philosophy of genuine intelligence. And, you know, it really is the only path towards a responsible future. So I really appreciate your time today. And no doubt there'll be more questions that come on our socials, I'm sure, as a result of this this podcast, this interview. So thank you, Marina.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure chatting with you. Really pleasant.
Thanks, Marina.